Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Francisco. It's nice to see you.
Likewise. Where are we going today?
Today, we are diving into the deep end of birth work and liberation and feminism and brujas. That sound fun?
Sounds fun to me.
It's actually a story. It's a show long informing, but very near and dear to my heart. Because as you know, in December, my second grandchild was born, Barrett James. And I was fortunate enough to be able to doula the birth with my daughter and my son-in-law, as I did with my first granddaughter, Georgia. And I just, you know, having your own children is unbelievable. But watching your child give birth, being part of that experience, is something that's indescribable. And I'm so thankful, one, that my son-in-law was so open and willing to have me be there to be part of the birth, and that my daughter felt safe and supported by my presence enough to want me to be there and to help shepherd her through this experience. And I have come out of both these experiences feeling very strongly about this idea of family birth and the idea that there should be family in the room, because when everyone is there, it normalizes the experience of childbirth. And we have lost that in the medicalization and the pathologizing of birth as being some sort of medical emergency over the last 100 years. And in many ways, it's stripped women of their own sense of empowerment in being able to give birth, right? Feeling like that they have everything they need within them, with the support and guidance of, you know, nurturing women in the room with them, that we can do this. But when you strip family out of the story and it's just the birthing mother and her very nervous husband who doesn't know what to expect, and then a team of professionals who are trained and loving and wanting to do their best, it's still a very cold and sterile experience. And so being able to be there as a family, because with my granddaughter's birth, my husband was actually there as well. So it really was kind of a family birth experience. And it was so relaxed that I think my daughter was able to relax. You know, it was just like mom and dad and my husband. And so I've carried that with me, and I tell everyone I can, you know, what a powerful experience to be able to witness the birth. And for my daughter, because I was there, and she will say this, she was able to have medication-free birth both times, because having me in the room when she started to really struggle and was wanting to give up or couldn't keep going, having me there and me be able to look her in the eye and say, "You've got this," she was able to push through. And so I think of all the women, young women, who could have had non-medicated births if they wanted to, but needed that extra support in a mom or a doula or someone that they really trusted to help shepherd them through, would have changed their whole experience. And so that's one piece of it. And then in my, you know, travels in the world, I came across the work of this woman who was teaching such a wide variety of classes in the round the realms of feminism and birth work and taking control of our experience as women and liberation and decolonizing the experience. Like, a lot of this work that she was doing is new to me, definitely new to my generation, because, you know, I haven't even explored the realms to which a lot of the next generation of women are talking about when it comes to birth and womanhood and feminism and just our whole experience as human beings. So I was lucky enough to find this woman who is offering birth work classes, and she taught a class or was hosting a class on birthing the new feminism. And I said, I need to learn about that, because clearly I'm old school feminist. I need to up my game. And so fortunately for me, this wonderful woman has agreed to be our guest today. And I wanted to focus not just on the work that she's doing in the world, but on her story and journey as a human in the world, how she came to be this presence and offer her skills to the world. What was it about her journey and her life and her ancestors that drew her to doing this work? So my guest today is Ere Juajardo Johnson. She's a queer biracial birth worker, a birth consultant for trauma survivors, and founder of Birth Bruja, which would be birth witch if we were going to define it, put the English term to it, an online educational platform devoted to intersectional, liberational, and decolonial approaches to birth work, healing, and life. Ere draws on her breadth of experience supporting survivors of sexual assault. She studied indigenous Mexican and Indian healing modalities, and she earned her master's degree in women, gender, spirituality, and social justice from the California Institute of Integral Studies. And she uses all of her knowledge and approaches her work, her birth work, as a mechanism for individuation and individual and collective liberation. So that's a huge mouthful. I don't know how much we'll get to unpack of her life story, but I can't wait for the conversation. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can join our show by sending us an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can participate by giving us a call. Although we can't take calls on the air, you can still ask questions and Francisco will be happy to read them for you. And our number is 805-549-8855. And for some reason, that number just keeps escaping me. You can also listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or podcast our show and subscribe, and you can listen at your convenience. So if you'd also like to jump into the 21st century, we are doing the show Instagram Live. So if you follow us on The Reluctant Therapist, we have the Instagram Live going right now. So you can kind of see Ere and myself from Francisco. We'll try to wave back to you. And other than that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back to start our conversation with Ere. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Follow the sun, and which way the wind blows. This day is done. Breathe, breathe in the air. Set your intentions. Dream with care. Tomorrow's a new day for everyone. Brand new moon and brand new sun.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and welcome to my guest, Ere Juajardo Johnson. Ere, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So I'm sure you don't remember that because you had so many people on the platform, but I remember sitting in that circle of women with the birthing the new feminism, and most all of the young women in the circle were doulas and birth workers. So I don't know if I just started paying more attention because my daughter was pregnant this last year and I was doing the doula work, but it seems like the work of doulas is exploding. Is that true? Or have I just not noticed how many women are doing birth work right now?
I think it's a both and, you know, I mean, people have been supporting loved ones through reproductive care for generations. We've never stopped, but I think this is not anything science-based. This is just me off the top of my head. I would say that arguably over the last 10 to 20 years, it's shifted where there's been a huge push for reclamation of reproductive spaces. And that's one of the things that when I, not to just jump into the story too much, but when I entered birth work, I was already somewhat like a grown person, you know? And so immediately I saw how it was both an intellectual practice. It was an academic, a political, a spiritual. And so, and I also had already established a spiritual practice. And so therefore, that's one of the huge foundations that the platform Birth Bruja has been founded upon, is just that to really show up with integrity for such dynamic work it needs constant depth and exploration. And so that's why on the platform, you'll see everything from the class that you took, which is open to anyone, you know, of interest, you know, who has interest in these intersections. But yeah, it was mostly birth workers because, you know, as you also spoke beautifully before, feminism is inherently political and spiritual and reclamation work. And so it's just a really, yeah, it was a really amazing class. Professor Alka Arora of California Institute of Integral Studies is a phenomenal teacher. And yeah, just one of many incredible facilitators I'm honored to have worked with.
But you've really brought this together. And again, maybe it's because I've been following Birth Bruja on Instagram and, you know, following your website, but it feels like you're growing quickly. And so I do want to dive into how you found this past. What is it about your ancestors and your life's journey that brought you to where you are today? I want to know how you came to be.
Just getting in right away.
I don't like to mess around. We only have an hour.
Okay. I will try to keep this short. Oh, I mean, by that, I mean concise. All right. So first and foremost, I am mixed race. My mom is of Mexican descent. My dad is predominantly German descent. And for many years growing up, I knew I was what I now call queer. But back then I knew I was bi, but I didn't necessarily have a word for it. And so growing up, then also my parents were divorced when I was two. And so I grew up in very different households, very different cultural households, very different socioeconomic households also. So from the get-go, I feel like I have been someone that's always in the in-between. You know, there's a poet, an activist, a scholar, Gloria Anzaldúa, who writes a lot about mestiza, so being mixed. And that's someone who resides in the borderlands, you know, the in-between, where you feel like you can relate to everyone and everywhere, but you not everywhere, but everyone, but you don't belong anywhere, right? Like I'm too white to be Mexican enough, but I'm like too brown to be white enough, right? Sort of thing. So flash forward into my early 20s, I started working at a rape crisis center. It's a women of color led community-based rape crisis center in San Francisco. It's called San Francisco Women Against Rape. And their approach to care is entirely founded upon anti-oppression. So recognizing how the individual experience of sexual violence is simultaneously connected to societal systems, right? And so we focused on serving marginalized populations. And so that meant women of color, incarcerated folks, formerly incarcerated folks, marginally housed, youth, queer folk, et cetera. And so, and also around that time, I was doing a lot of work around my identity, around belongingness and finding home in my body. And so that's how I started studying Ayurveda, which is an Indian science, or from India meaning Indian science meaning from India. And so at the same time that I was diving into healing work and political work, I was also diving into healing around ancestral practices. And so it's through the blessing of Ayurveda that I was able to heal some of my baggage around Catholicism. You know, I kind of threw out the baby with the bathwater in a lot of ways because I thought it was just messed up Catholicism, but it, you know, so it allowed me to unpack. And then flash forward, I don't even know how many years, maybe 9 years later, is I had been doing holistic peer counseling. I'm still working at the Rape Crisis Center, and I took a doula training to inform my work as a holistic peer counselor, because naturally, as I grew older, so did my community. And so there's a lot more questions around reproductive experiences. And it was like the second full weekend in, it was like the aha moment, you know, where it just like, it just like goosebumps all over when I realized that birth work is my home. Because in that space, previously, I felt like an octopus, you know, with tentacles and in different spaces, you know, whether it be where I was like too political to be comfortable in spiritual spaces, but like too woo to be comfortable in political spaces. And so I was just, again, this octopi. And all of a sudden, in the birth room, in the birth experience, it all came together. you know, my geekiness for anatomy, you know, like my passion for connection. And so therefore, yeah, I just really hit the ground running. And from the get-go, I knew that birth work in a lot of ways is like a lot of mainstream spaces. It's very centered around the experience of white folk, around straight folk, around Christian folk. And I knew that if I wanted to really do this work in a sustainable and empowering way, I had to approach it, again, from the get-go, seeking community that is passionate about liberation, that's passionate about intersectional approaches. And so I'm trying to keep this concise. If I'm losing you, let me know.
No, I want to back up because I want to make sure that all the defined elements of the story are there. Mm-hmm. Because you talk about kind of healing your own ancestral trauma. I want to back up to that.
It totally glazes over that kind of dimension.
Yes, you did. You just like, because it's so, to me, inherent in how you see birth work, which is helping to separate birth from the patriarchal dominator society, which has made women almost just a vehicle of childbirth and not the center of the birth, if I'm correct. And so back up a little bit to explain, why is this healing the trauma, the ancestral trauma, important? Because we've touched on it a couple times over the last few weeks with Starhawk was on and Anita Mandley was on talking about ancestral trauma. So I'm trying to keep that in the conversation, but could you describe a little bit then how that connected to your seeing the patriarchal influence in today's birth work?
Yeah. So in short, if I can try, there's a lot of pain that comes from surviving in the States. And so, for example, on my dad's side, that family had been here longer than my mom's, but that side of the family, basically the person that came over from Germany was such a wildly violent man, who died in prison because of violence against his family, that just to try to cut themselves away from that trauma, they also cut away from their culture, right? And from their knowing of themselves, they change their last name to fit in. And then a lot of the more, I guess, normalized aspects of American, you know, assimilation took place. And then on my mom's side, she's technically second generation, but a lot of her experiences reflect first generation sort of dynamics. And also, Metro Detroit area, you know, to try to come to the States and to make your way up the hierarchy, right? The socioeconomic and societal hierarchy meant to cut away the things that were less than. And so for that, I'm talking about how, trying to cut off and ignore the indigenous ancestry of the family, because to be white meant that you were higher up, right? So my grandma to this day, by the way, identifies as white, and would be really upset if she were to know that I don't identify as white. I identify as a person of color with white privilege because of my mixed heritage. And so, yeah, like my mom, she passed along what she could. You know, she had her own, again, identity stuff because of being first generation. But that meant that that Catholicism was the only spiritual reference I had, which is honestly the way that my family practices. It isn't very spiritual. And so I guess, like, yeah, coming forward, it wasn't until, again, having the combination of Ayurveda, where I could actually sit with the feeling in my body of like feeling like I'm alone or feeling like I'm, you know, again, feeling just like I don't belong, like that whole, again, spiritual exploration. It was a mixture of that and then the political education that allowed me to name some of those dynamics. So, for example, being able to name that it was survivorship that got my family through on both sides, and it's not a weakness or something to be sad necessarily, the fact that they survived as best they could. So whether that be that they were drinking or whether they were violent, however it is, like they survived. And now with my incarnation, right, I'm at a different place. And so it allowed me to do that mixture of forgiveness and also being able to be like, okay, with my identity, with my lifetime, I can heal some of that shit, some of that stuff, you know? And so
it seems like, yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Well, go ahead. It's a hard thing to kind of like wrap up because it's still in progress, you know?
Well, and it's also, I think it's so new to our vernacular, this idea that there's trauma that is experienced as people move up the socioeconomic ladder, because we've all been taught that the real goal is to successfully arrive at a place and culture where you have the education and the finances to support you. And yet so many people live in a state of emptiness, right? That existential void, and they wonder why. But a lot of the healing the trauma is about realizing that when you come to this country and you assimilate, you cut ties with the history, which means you become rootless. And in that rootlessness, you're untethered to a story or a history and ancestry, which then would lead us to wander and feel lost or depressed or anxious. And so, but if I'm telling the story correctly, it's a form of healing that void is to reconnect those roots back to your ancestors so that you feel like your story is longer and more connected than just your experience as an individual.
Yes, absolutely. And also with traditions all over the globe, right? Indigenous traditions are inherently multifaceted, holistic, right? They address wellness and human experience on a mind, body, soul level, right? And so one of the things about assimilating in the state specifically is that means that we have to embrace a culture of capitalism, materialism. And so thus to assimilate means that we inherently are embracing racism, right? This notion, whether it be of lighter skinned or Eurocentric beauty features, right, is one thing, drawing it back to birth, without going too much into like the whole history and stuff. But one of the huge rushes to bringing birth into the hospitals is that it was a sign of socioeconomic advancement. Just like how moving from growing your own food to store-bought purchases and canned food and processed food, that was an indication of socioeconomic advancement, right? So there's all these harmful, empty cultures that had to be embraced in order, again, for successful, quote unquote, assimilation to take place. And so, yeah, there's a lot of, arguably speaking, healing for me anyways, is way more unlearning than it is of learning, you know?
And it's what you said just now is so ding, ding, ding for me, because we assume in many parts of our culture that people that grow their own food or would birth at home are poor people and couldn't afford better. And yet we have one of the highest birth mortality rates in the world because we send women to a hospital and pathologize it. And we have high rates of bacteria-borne food illnesses because people are sourcing out their access to food. So the ironies of the, you know, the moving, the advancing, like for some reason, the idea that everything modern is an improvement doesn't serve us. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Eri Guajardo Johnson, and she is a birth worker and founder of Birth Bruja, which is an online educational platform devoted to intersectional, liberational, and decolonial approaches to birth work. And we are just trying to unpack her story because there's so much to share. But we do have a call. Francisco.
Yes, a caller would like to know the difference between a doula, a midwife, and a birth worker.
Good question.
Fabulous question. Thanks for bringing it back to point.
Yeah.
Eri.
All right. So first off, birth worker is a term that's being more and more embraced because it honors the full, it's a name that can be used to describe the full spectrum of folks that support reproductive care. So that means birth doulas, postpartum doulas, abortion support survivors, vaginal or sacral steaming consultants. It's a term that's used to describe folks that were in this spectrum, but were traditionally trained, like from their communities, right? Passed down ancestral lineage, as well as folks who trained within certified organizations. So it's a really broad term. I generally speaking use the term birth worker to describe myself for the most part, because the word doula actually, it's a Greek word that is used to describe a female slave. And so thus, as you can imagine, that terminology is incredibly problematic for a lot of folks of color. And it's the term doula, I'm messing on the year, but it was a word used in the 70s in an academic dissertation by a woman, a white feminist scholar, who used doula to describe this sort of work. And so thus, when the natural birth movement blew up, so did the term doula. But before then, this was just something everyone always did, right? There wasn't like a term for it. A midwife, the difference between a midwife and a midwife is someone who is responsible for your medical well-being, for you and your babies. A doula is someone who is trained more as a holistic counsel. Well, also, even that in itself is different. A doula is very commonly described as an act, as a, oh my gosh, begins with an A, advocate. Someone who to help provide you with basic birth information so that you know your options. So, for example, if you have access to health insurance, that they would help describe, you know, the local hospitals around you to help match, you know, which hospital culture fits the birth vision that you have. Someone who is aware enough with the general, you know, processes of pregnancy so that if you happen to share, yo, I got this itch on my belly and it's a rash, that person would be able to be like, hey, you know, maybe this sort of rash is something that would be good to call your medical provider about. And one more little snippet here, and then I'll kind of pause for there, because it's a really huge arena. And so within the term of doula, specifically birth doula, there's kind of two forks in the road. One, which is birth doulas that are trained within larger certified institutions where their boundaries are very hard, very narrow. They will give you medical-based information and that's kind of it. And then there's other realms, which comes from more traditional community-based approaches where you may find a little different boundaries. So for example, if you are someone who has a relationship with divinity, that person may pray with you on the phone. They may be more comfortable in building an altar in your room. They may be more familiar with using herbs to support your body, in addition to all the medical advocacy pieces that I had previously mentioned. So,
and both of my daughters were born with midwives, whom I adore to this day, because they, and I don't know if this is traditional, but they both sat with me the entire process of my laboring and the birth, as opposed to a traditional OBGYN would just show up to catch the baby at the end. But to me, that's one of the midwife had such, and every appointment with the midwife asked about how I was doing and how I was feeling and my emotional state, as opposed to just checking on the baby. Because it's the difference to me between that patriarchal vision that women are just the vehicle for childbirth and the midwife's vision, which is women are the center of the birth experience and caring for the mother and tending to her experience is critical. Would that also be?
For the most part, that's just one of many cultural differences. So there's home birth midwives, and then there's hospital-based midwives, and then there's OBs. And hospital-based midwives in many ways are kind of like a mixture of both, where a lot of times they will have a more holistic approach than OBs, but not always. And they also, so midwives are trained to work with non-complicated births, right? So if you don't have high blood pressure, if you don't have preeclampsia, if you don't have pre-existing issues, then you're a great candidate, right, to work with most midwives. And also midwives are trained more around using the anatomy of the body to support the birth process. So there's some wild MacGyver stuff that I've seen in the birth room from midwives, because they know how to manipulate the pelvis to create these big shapes, while otherwise the OBs would have had stayed hands off and then maybe then, right, use a vacuum for assistance or episiotomy or a C-section. The thing about hospital-based births, though, is that you have insurance-based culture, which means that it's about efficiency and it's about liability, right? Versus that's what shapes the birth culture rather than the actual experience of birth, versus Yeah, that's why on average, if you were to go for a basic OB visit, you would have 15 minutes of talking, and then the rest would be you meeting with the nurse, right, for all your checkups. Meanwhile, the midwives, most especially home-based midwives or birth center midwives, they'll sit with you for 45 minutes talking it out about like, how are you pooping? Are you not pooping? How are you, you know, like really fleshing out deeply, and then doing it themselves in relation to doing all the usual checkups, you know, blood pressure, baby monitoring, et cetera. So.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. And if you do want to ask a question of our Ruth Bruja, our number is 805-543-8855. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guest is the birth bruja, Ari Guajardo Johnson, and we're finding out her story, and we're also talking about the new pathways towards decolonizing and liberating the experience of birth and the experience of femininity and feminism and the feminine in our culture. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to continue our conversation.
She says, wake up, it's no use pretending. I'll keep stealing, breathing her. Birds are leaving over owners, and then one of us will die inside these arms. Eyes wide open.
You're listening to Public Radio for the Central Coast, KCBX. Coming up at 3 o'clock, it's Fresh Air, followed by All Things Considered from 4:30 to 6:30, and then our music programming begins at 6:30. If you have any questions for our guest today, be sure to send them in or call us at 805-549-8855. Our conversation with the reluctant therapist, Elizabeth Barrett, continues right now on KCBX.
All right, so Ari, let's go back to, because I really want to find out how you found your voice and your place in the world as a woman and as a human. And we kind of stopped with, you found your place in doing birth work and everything kind of came together for you. So where did that take you from that point? You had this aha, I'm supposed to be in this space. Where did it take you?
So I was in the Bay Area, San Francisco area, which is a huge difference, honestly, because there's a lot of birth workers there. There's a lot of different kinds of birth worker communities. And so it was easier than a lot of places across the states to access like-minded and like-hearted people. So I reached out and I built relationships with folks who were just as woo as I and also just as political. And so I was gardening one day and I was thinking about how amazing, how like lucky I was to be having such incredible conversations with so many people and how different I felt my life trajectory would have been had my younger self known about this sort of work and also heard these sort of conversations. And so as I was gardening, the words birth bruja came into my head and I'm just like, I love alliteration, you know, like, thanks, you know, thanks creator. And then the podcast started. And I honestly thought it was just going to be like, my friends will listen, my mom will listen, it'll be fun. And then that'll be it. And then, yeah, flash forward. It took off and I started to continue to build relationships, started to have a monthly birthwork mentorship circle. And then, yeah, next thing you knew, there were almost every single weekend, it's been online workshops. And Birth Bruja, the platform, supports folks of all identities. And also, that being said, while it supports all identities, it centers the experience of marginalized folks, right? So when we're talking about birth, for example, right, we would be talking about one that is inclusive around ancestral practices, one that values dream work, right? Dream work and creative writing and ritual, just as important as we value evidence-based research, right? And then also, as I shared earlier, that's why the topics are so wide. While we'll have like tarot workshops and feminist workshops and embodiment workshops, because again, to be in the birth space as a birthing person means that you're navigating being in a body, and knowing that a lot of birthing folks are in bodies that have been socialized as female, right? Like from the beginning, even if they transitioned over time to, you know, to a different gender. That means that to be in a body that's been socialized as female means that we inherently have to work with shame, right? That we inherently, a huge percentage of folks have to work with a body that has experienced so many kinds of trauma, specifically sexual trauma, that's part of the experience, right? Also, the birth experience is really intense. And so you can be the most, you can read all the books, you could do all the meditations, but one guaranteed thing is that you are going to meet some really overwhelming spaces, whether they be overwhelmingly beautiful and empowering or overwhelmingly challenging. And so that's where the spiritual component comes in, and that knowing ourselves component, because you can't walk through that portal without emerging the other side very, very changed, you know? And in my experience of supporting birthing folks in the room, the folks that are more likely to experience birth as an empowering experience are folks that are going into it wanting it to be meaningful, like wanting it to be meaningful in relation to, like, they really want to test their physical limits, or they really want to have their entire birth experience rooted in their love for that baby or their love for their family. People who are open to the presence of God or divinity or their ancestors, that you better believe when you're, especially right when you're in transition and you're about to lose it, like they're right there. And those that have the practices and the verbiage to access it, right? Like that's powerful medicine. And on the flip side too, that's the cool thing about being human, is we can be as profound or as not profound as we want to be, you know? And,
yes.
And that's totally okay too, right? For folks that just want to immediately disassociate from their body, you know, where it's just like, let's just get this baby out so I can go back to my life. That's legit, friend. Like, you do you, have this birth as safely and as smoothly as you can, right? As we can. And that be that. But it's just the potential that is just so addicting, the potential for transformation. And as you shared that beautiful story at the beginning, this isn't just like a feel-good experience, right? This is something that can literally transform relationships that lasts generations. And then on an overtly spiritual level, the healing that you did within yourself and the healing and beauty that you wove with your, you know, with your family being there, that also reached back to the ancestors behind you and helped to heal the echoes of violence, the echoes of feeling despair or feeling isolated, you know, like those vibrations carry forth, and you gifted that, you know? And so, yeah.
Well, and it's, I kind of, because we're coming into Sexual Assault Awareness Month with April, I'm kind of thinking about your experience working with survivors of assault. And when you talked about the birthing experiences and a lot of women wanting to dissociate and just get the baby out, I would imagine that those who are trauma survivors or assault survivors, that birth can then be traumatic on all other levels, that I would imagine trying to heal women through the birthing process to reclaim their bodies must be a powerful experience. Or is it possible?
Yes, it is so possible. So possible. So thank you for bringing that up. As you know, and I can't remember if we brought it up here, but I specialize in supporting survivors of sexual assault. I support survivors of trauma, but I specialize in supporting survivors of sexual assault. And one of the most recent statistics I read through RAIN website, Rape and Incest National Network, I believe it's called, is that, eight out of 10 women will experience sexual violence by the time they're 22. So the thing about sexual violence, right, is that we live in a rape culture, which means that it is normalized to have people grope you. It's normalized to have unwanted attention. It's normalized to be in a relationship and be guilted or coerced into sex. Like, there are so many examples. And so therefore, if I had a freaking dollar for how many times I've worked with birthing person where when I ask, you know, I open the question always, right? Like, if you've, I explain how sometimes trauma can manifest in the birthing experience and why it can be helpful for us to start unpacking that work beforehand. If I had a dollar for how many times folks would describe a situation that straight up sounds like sexual assault, but they don't relate it as such. For many, many reasons, myself included, I'm a survivor. And it wasn't until I was in training to be a rape crisis peer counselor that I was like, oh, what I experienced that one time, that's actually rape. But in my head, in that moment, especially where I was back then, I was roofied and I woke up and I didn't know where I was. And the first thought in my head was, wow, you're a slut.
Right. I've done something wrong. Yes.
It was easier to embrace blaming myself because that meant that all I needed to do is change my behavior and then it won't happen again. Right. Except it actually did, but in different situation. So anywho, there's so many of us that have this imprinting, this embodiment of trauma, even though we don't identify as trauma survivors. And so to go back to one of the statements you said is it's absolutely powerful and possible for folks to go through the reproductive experience and come out with healing that they never anticipated having. The big aspect of work that I do with trauma survivors is I go through kind of excruciatingly step by step the various dynamics of care, starting from OB visits or midwife visits all the way through postpartum. And we go over some of the more overtly like invasive stuff, like the stuff that is most can easily re-traumatize or re-victimize. So for example, if you're a trauma survivor, especially if it was something from, you know, from like a significant other. So you go into the OB, they're late, right? So they come in, they're not even looking you in the face. And they're like, okay, sit back, right? Bring your knees apart. And all of a sudden you barely know this person. They're not acknowledging you. They're treating your body like a machine, like they don't care. Right? You're freaking out on the inside, but because you're a good patient, you're not making a scene about it. Right? And then, so you're doing what you're supposed to do. And just that OB visit without the OB even knowing, you're leaving traumatized. So it's rewounding. And next thing you know, even someone, again, who did all the intention building and all the research can go by the time birth comes and by the time they go into that birth room, their body is so overridden with traumatic experiences, let alone the mustering up of past traumas, that they go in. And again, it makes total sense that someone would go in if they wanted to do total unmedicated birth, that they would in that moment change their mind and not want to feel anything because it's overwhelming.
Or they'd be so tight is what my experience with clients or your young people is that you're so tight because of the fear of the experience or the re-traumatizing that you can't let the baby go.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And as you, right. So increased tension can mean longer labor. It can mean higher pain experience. And also again, easily understood is arguably birth is one of the only times that pain is actually a healthy sign. And that's what a lot of birth prep, especially the more woo, it's about reframing pain. Because in Western society, what we do, we try to pain is bad and we try to top it off and we take the pills and we blame the doctor when we don't heal fast enough, like all these, right? It's not an aspect of our society that we take our own accountability for. And so therefore, if you're a trauma survivor where you were harmed and where you had pain as a result of your trauma, right, as a result of the assault, and then now you're in the birth room and you having pain in your vaginal walls, like how can you even, you know, it's really hard to be in an empowered place when that sharp pain is reminding you of your past, right? And so those are just some examples of some of the more challenging aspects. But do you mind if I also just share some of the more empowering things that can help?
That's what I wanted to switch a little bit to. Where is birth taking us? I want to reintroduce you, my guest, Ari Lombardo Johnson. She is, if you're just tuning in, a queer biracial birth worker, birth consultant for trauma survivors, founder of Birth Bruja, which we're going to unpack, which is an online educational platform devoted to intersectional, liberational, and decolonial approaches to birth work, healing, and life. And so, Ari, that's what I want to talk about, is the reclaiming of the term bruja or witch, because I've had guests on. I had Starhawk a few weeks ago talking about her Wiccan practices, and that I want to do a little history deep dive of why it's important to reclaim this, because from my understanding is that indigenous wisdom died with many women who were burned at the stake for having this wisdom that we're trying to relearn or recapture it 1,000 years later, hundreds of years later. So can you talk a little bit about the bruja, the witch, and where you see birth going in your lifetime? What is this goal that we're moving towards, the positive?
Okay. Before I do that, yes, I have to mention some of the empowering things that could happen in the birth room for trauma survivors, because I don't want to like scare folks and then just leave them.
100%. You know? Yes. Yeah. Because I believe that the healing is what we're going towards.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So one of the powerful things that happens for a lot of folks that are pregnant is this is one of the first times in their life that they are prioritizing their body, their bodily well-being. And it's also one of the first times that they started to recognize their inherent power that comes just from within. And so that can be, so knowing that a lot of trauma, a lot of sexual assault survivors have shame and guilt, and it's in the narratives, I'm broken, I'm dirty, right? These narratives. And then with pregnancy can come an opportunity to unlearn those narratives and reclaim something new. And then similarly in the birth room, again, one of the beautiful things about birth is whether you want it to or not, whether you're on the epidural from the beginning or whether you are having a complete unmedicated experience, you will have it. It is an intense physical, spiritual, and mental experience. Whether you tap into it or not, that's what's happening. And so that's what's so beautiful, is that just the waves of birth can really move so much somatic trauma, right? Like embodied trauma. And so again, whether you are into using symbolism or prayer, or whether you're wanting to use, whether you're wanting to acknowledge your trauma in the birth room or not, you're accessing power that's bigger than you, primordial power. And so therefore a lot of folks come out the other side feeling lighter, feeling like they moved things through, and feeling for the first time in their whole life that they're actually able to start the next leg of their healing journey. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you for letting me.
No, that's 100%. And I just wanted to mention that when I gave birth to my first daughter, I remember feeling like I was invincible. And it was the first time in my life that I felt proud of my body. And the whole pregnancy, I felt proud of my body, what it could do. And so it was transformative. And I hadn't really connected that until you brought that up now, and forgotten that there's so much of the whole process for women reclaiming the power of what it is to just embody the female form.
Yeah.
So that's your generation's gift, is to bring that more into the vernacular. So let's talk about the reclaiming of the bruja and what you see as the future of birth.
Thank
in
you.
Our culture.
So as I mentioned, the term birth bruja, I just received it, right? That wasn't something I like pondered about. And then when Birth Bruja was transitioning from just a podcast to a community platform, I was really conflicted about using the term bruja because I grew up with, you know, a Catholic oriented family where bruja is something that's a negative connotation. And also, as we know, too, in Western society. So, yes, witch is something, witch and bruja, right, are terms used to demonize people, to make fun of them. It's silly. It's what ignorant people do. It's made up, right? Those are all these connotations. And when I started my master's program, women's spirituality, or that's what it used to be called, I did some research around, and actually the folks that they burned at the stake for being witches were women who were too educated, too outspoken, women who owned land that the church wanted, but also folks who were queer, trans folks, folks who were disabled. It was all the unwanted, right? It was all the what now we would reference as marginalized folks, right? Folks who are continue to be demonized in this, in our culture. And so it felt like a powerful word to be reclaiming, because in terms of the kind of community and the topics that I wanted to build, we'd all be burned for that, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And so it felt like it felt important. And also too, as the years went on, my own spiritual practices started to shift. And I now consider myself a bruja. And I don't want to go too much into that, 'cause that's like a whole other, you know,
We'll bring Starhawk back and we'll all talk about it.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a big reclamation. It's a movement that's building, the identity of witch as itself. And that's also kind of separate from the practice of Wicca. But also brujeria as itself and also as its own practice. And so it's really cool because these conversations about being a witch or about being a bruja, they also tie into conversations around gender, conversations around ancestral reclamation, who are the knowledge keepers, what's legit, what's not. So it's like all provocative and really powerful. So
do you feel that we're in a place that we can step in and challenge that patriarchal structure? And I don't want to confuse this idea of patriarchal about bashing men, because that just ends the conversation right there. But this idea that do you think socially that we're in a place where people are willing to see that the indigenous practices, the foods, the herbs, the medicines, the beliefs are as legitimate as this institution of patriarchal medicine and truth that we've been taught to be real? Do you think we're in a moment of that shift as being possible?
I have noticed that, you know, but also it could just be, yeah, I want to say yes and no, because you know that these truth tellers have been here for decades and right generations. They've always been there. They've taken the risk to protect this knowledge and to pass it. But also, yeah, like on a mainstream level, social media, for all of the critiques we could has really revolutionized the way that we portray information. And just to go, I just want to emphasize what you said, is that to talk about patriarchy is not to bash men or male identified folks. Women, all genders, are responsible for perpetuating patriarchy, just like all ethnicities are responsible for perpetuating white supremacy, right? Like the system is what we're talking about, what we're trying to dismantle, not the people. I think especially with where the US, again, because my context is US, I think especially where the US is in relation to racial dynamics, ethnic dynamics, gender dynamics, we're at a place now where we have a little more spaciousness to question and spaciousness to rebuild systems. So we're not just here dismantling stuff and then in the rubble, we're like, now what? It's like, no, we're already building systems outside of these oppressive ways of being, so that now, like your mom and my mom, now they are able to learn and question in ways that they otherwise wouldn't have had access to because it was dangerous, right? Or it threatened their ability to access job or how people perceive them as mothers, et cetera.
And I think, again, because we're coming towards the end of the hour, I don't want to open up another huge subject, but for you in the place that you find yourself in your life, if you were to say, I'll know I've I've reached what I wanted when I get where, we'll leave on a big note, but what is there for you, Ari? Where do you want to be in your life?
Oh, that's such a huge question.
And you have 2 minutes to answer your entire.
Okay. All right. Two things are coming to mind. I would love Birth Bruja as an actual entity or just the essence of the community. I would like that to be its own legit hub in the birthwork community, where it's normal to be talking about dream work, right? Where it's normal to be talking about the nuances of identity and sex and reproduction, all that. So I want that to be normal and not like a niche, you know? And I want to write a book about being a survivor and going through the reproductive experience, because a lot of the stuff that's out there right now centers white folks, straight folks. There's a lot of assumptions. It's not an empowering, like from within sort of culture. A lot of the talk is top down. Like, I mean, no offense, therapists are amazing and really important, but right. It's a hierarchical dynamic, right?
And it's a patriarchal system, but that's a whole nother show.
Wasn't going to say it.
I own it. We own it here. It is.
Yeah.
So can I invite you back so we can carry on this conversation? Because I think we're just tapping into this idea that we can't have the full healing or the transition until we recognize that even the helping professions are part of the patriarchal colonizing problem, that even the healing we're trying to give as therapists is continuing to push the same story of colonialism and patriarch that is keeping people oppressed. So I hope you'll come back. Tell people how they can reach you or reach Birth Bruja.
Okay, so Birth Bruja, the website is birthbruja.com. So B-I-R-T-H, B as in boy, R-U-J-A.com. You can reach me at on Instagram and Facebook. The handle is Birth Bruja. And just thank you so much for the chance to have this conversation with you.
I've loved it. Thank you for being my guest. Ari Guajardo Johnson, birth worker, Birth Bruja. Thank you for tuning in today. This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Follow me on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. I'll upload this Instagram live if you'd like to see us. Or you can podcast our show or find us at kcbx.org. As always, thank you for being part of the community. And thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Baby, see how I've been living. Velvet curtains on the windows too. Keep the bride in, I'm forgiven. Life I'm shining through. Baby, I remember all the things we did when we slept together in the blue behind your eyelids, baby. Sweet baby, chase your sin through the gloom till I found these purple flowers. I will spin, I will soon smelling you for hours. Lavender, lotus blossoms too. Water the dirt flowers last for you, baby. Sweet baby.